Today, the West is attempting something that has never been tried, capping the price of oil. The G7 group of leading industrialized nations, the European Union and Australia, have agreed not to facilitate the export of Russian oil unless it's sold for $60 or less a barrel. And today, the EU banned all seaborne imports of Russian oil. Nick Schifrin explains the impact of the farthest-reaching efforts to target one of Russia's main sources of income that helps fund its war in Ukraine.
Every day, Russia exports an average of 7.7 million barrels of oil. In October, that made Moscow $17 billion. Exporting those barrels require a buyer, a ship which has an owner, charterers, and managers. It also has insurance and reinsurance and logistics. And now, all these services subject to U.S., EU, or Australian law, that's 90% of them, can't legally facilitate Russian oil exports unless that barrel is bought for $60 or less.
We want to reduce the income Putin gets from his oil because he's financing his barbaric war with it and all the atrocities the Russians are committing in Ukraine. And at the same time, not disrupt international oil markets. That would not help us either.
Russia is the world's second-largest oil exporter. And this weekend, Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said Russia would keep selling oil, quote, only to those countries that will work with us under market conditions, even if we have to reduce production a little. Those countries outside the cap include China, Turkey, and India, which together buy 3.5 million seaborne Russian barrels a day. Today, Beijing said it would ignore the West's efforts.
China and Russia always carry out energy cooperation in the spirit of mutual respect and mutual benefit.
U.S. officials believe $60 is high enough to motivate Russia to keep producing. But Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called the cap too high.
You wouldn't call it a serious decision to set such a limit for Russian prices, which is quite comfortable for the budget of a terrorist state. This is a weak position.
And for more on all this, we turn to Elena Rybakova, Deputy Chief Economist at the Institute of International Finance. Her organization is a global association of the financial industry. Elena Rybakova, thank you very much. Welcome to the NewsHour. How much will this $60 price cap reduce Russian revenues?
Well, it will reduce Russian revenues by about 1 or 2 percentage points of GDP. It will make Russia's deficit next year not 2%, it will make it 3 or 4%. And let's not forget that Russia's debt to GDP ratio is one of the lowest in the world at 17%. So I would say not too much.
And if I'm sitting in Ukraine thinking about this price cap, hearing Zelensky say it's not enough, 1 to 2% sounds like a lot less than what Ukraine has suffered.
Absolutely. What Russia has done since 2014 is prepare Fortress Russia. It has protected its external finances, it has cleaned up its banking system, it's implemented inflation targeting and the fiscal rule in order to be better protected from future sanctions that we might impose on them.
How is Russia likely to respond beyond the statement that we saw it make this weekend? Are U.S. officials right in predicting that Russia will continue to produce the same level of oil?
This is a very tough prediction. Russia has been very consistent from day one saying that they're not going to comply with the oil price cap, which is in this case particularly ironic because this price cap is very close to their budgeted number. It might be actually very convenient for them to comply. But as we know, President Putin can be extremely stubborn and not guided by macroeconomic considerations, but how it looks on the geopolitical agenda. And then he just might refuse because so far the message has been extremely consistent. As you mentioned, Novak made the statement, the Minister of Energy, Peskov, presser for Putin as well, Putin himself, and they also made prepared guidelines for not complying. So if one of their buyers are complying with the oil price cap, it is illegal for them to then sell to that person.
And so is there a risk there that if Russia decides to reduce production, that would actually drive prices up?
There is a risk. Basically, if Russia refuses, it means it shoots itself in the leg, and then we actually go back to the embargo. We've spent a disproportionate time discussing the oil price cap just because of the complexity of the oil price cap endeavor. But the embargo, I think, that's the real game changer here, Europe refusing to buy Russian oil. So if Russia refuses to sell at the cap, I think then that's what we're going to, an embargo. There is a risk of, I've seen estimates, we've looked at it ourselves, you know, between 3.5 to 2 million barrels per day could be removed from the market. And then, of course, that will have a short-term impact on the oil price.
The embargo you're talking about, of course, is the EU stopping any kind of seaborne oil and shipments as of today. How significant is that given Europe's historic reliance on Russian oil?
Well, Europe has demonstrated it can live without Russian gas, and European reliance on Russian gas has been disproportionately more significant than Russian oil. Yes, before this war, or the sort of full-fledged invasion, Europe used to import more than 40% of Russian oil. That picture has changed dramatically already. You know, we've seen China, India, Turkey pick up Russian oil, and Europe has reduced it significantly. So, as you know, embargo is just on seaborne oil, but already Germany and Poland said they're not going to use the Druzhba, by the way, is friendship, right? Ironic. A pipeline, they're not going to buy oil from that pipeline either. So I think for Europe, if Europe has demonstrated they can live without Russian gas, they can definitely live without Russian oil.
Russia has created what industry experts call a ghost fleet of ships, basically ships not covered by traditional insurance, again, most of which is governed by the G7. Will those kind of efforts that Russia's making allow it to effectively skirt around the price cap?
Well, the fact that we gave them a sort of a headway, you know, to a head start, you know, to prepare for this measure, of course, for European Union, it was also important for their own reasons to have this sort of gap between the implementation of the sixth package and the actual enforce, sort of coming into force. Russia established a working group in Kremlin, you know, working very hard how to circumvent the sanctions. They have bought extra ships and they found sort of extra capacity. That is more than a quarter of their seaborne oil at the moment. So they still have a big gap, you know, once the embargo and the oil price cap go into force, they cannot fully substitute the global company's provision of ships for seaborne oil.
And finally, these two actions today, both the price cap that we've been focused on and the EU embargo, are the largest attempt by the U.S. and Europe to try and affect Russia's finances when it comes to being able to fight the war in Ukraine. So bottom line, will these steps have an impact in how Russia wages its war in Ukraine?
Well, I'll turn it around, ask you a question. Do you think Putin is concerned about 1 or 2 percentage points of GDP loss in revenues in the near term? He is willing to send more than 1 million people mobilized to the war that will likely die without any preparation for this sort of pointless invasion. Will that change his, you know, calculus? I highly doubt that. However, the fact that we are imposing measures, we're sending strong signals that we want to do what's possible to stop the war, it will have a medium-term impact on Russia. Maybe not today, not tomorrow, not even potentially next year, but it will eventually limit Russia's ability to continue this war or start the new ones.
Alina Rybakova, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.